Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, this is John Smart.
And I'm Anita Finley.
And this
welcome
is
to Finley and Smart Talk.
Over each
should
other.
Should we say it at the same time?
We got to rehearse that a little more.
We're like the Rockettes, I swear. Only without the tights.
An interesting, interesting show tonight that Anita actually brainstormed up, and I really appreciate it. She wants to touch on, she mentioned touching on, with the election coming, two films from the 70s, which I happen to believe is the last great era of American film. Rollerball and Network. And
well, do you want me to just jump in and describe Rollerball? Because I'm sure that most of the people listening have never heard of this movie.
Oh, I wouldn't be so sure of that, but jump in anyway.
Oh, okay. Well, Rollerball was made in 1975 and directed by the brilliant Norman Jewison. And it's kind of a sci-fi movie that takes place in the year 2018. So that's really not that much of a futuristic stretch from where we are right now. And strangely enough, I think in 6 years we may actually be where this movie says we are. So let me take 100 words or less to describe it to you. Apparently one corporation now rules the world. John Houseman is its CEO, and there is no more war. And to substitute for war, in order to let people get out all their aggressions, they have a very violent sport known as rollerball. And I think it's a version of a roller derby, and the guys are heavily padded, and they basically kick the crap out of each other, you know, trying to get this steel ball in the hole at the end of the rink. And James Caan plays their very, you know, virile and, I guess, quarterback, for lack of a better way to describe him. He's so incredibly successful at this game, and this is the only way that people get their aggressions out is by watching Rollerball. And he's so successful that the company cannot figure out enough ways to reward him with money and women and women, who knows. But what happens is he becomes more successful than the game.
Mm-hmm.
And what starts to happen is that you root for him, and you root for him as an individual over the collective. And I think they get threatened by that, and they decide that that cannot happen because if we start rooting for individual achievement, the collective will be ruined, and we have to kill him. So that's what they set out to try and kill him. And in the end, spoiler alert, he winds up victorious.
So you connect this with what's happening now, Anita? Because I certainly can. I mean, it's a fascinating film, and it's because it's also one of those films that's absolutely prescient for, I wouldn't say collective now, I would say the herd, because what we see happening all the time now, if anybody gets outside the herd, and I would say you see this on the left as much or more than you see it on the right at this point politically, outside the herd, almost immediately, it's not that you kill them, but what happens is you bring the person down by making them crazy.
By ridiculing them.
Yes, absolutely. I think that we saw this to a degree with Hillary Clinton. I think we saw it to a degree with Sarah Palin. And certainly there were aspects of that because they were both women. But when you want to dismiss something, the group, or the media in this case, will get together and make the person crazy. In other words, that person is unhinged.
Yes, exactly. You are some kind of a lunatic. And I've seen this play out even today with the horrors of Hurricane Sandy. And I just wanted to take a moment to offer my condolences. I'm so sorry to the families of people who were lost because of this horrible event back east. But, you know, even the media like MSNBC is taking this opportunity to ridicule Romney for his efforts to, you know, get supplies together for people who may need at this point because there are power outages or they can't get they can't get perishables or non-perishable items. And I find this like, do you have to find every single reason to ridicule and condemn somebody? What's that all about?
Well, it's all about the collective, what you said. It's all about the team. That we're in the midst of a situation right now. There's a week to go before the election. I do happen to think, unlike some commentators out there, that this hurricane could change just enough to change the trajectory of the election. Having said that, a place like MSNBC has an agenda. There's no question about that. They have an agenda, and their agenda is to make sure that Obama looks good and gets reelected at all costs. So it doesn't matter what Mitt Romney does. In this case, MSNBC is the corporation sort of pushing out the collective, you know, what needs to happen. There can't anything outside the narrative.
Well,
and the narrative is
– go ahead.
I was going to say
was the other problem that goes directly to what you're talking about, John, is the vertical ownership in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And I had an interview, a fabulous interview with Kim Powers Dilson last Friday, and she mentioned a quote that Ted Turner offered in the 80s saying that right now there are about four or five companies that control all the communication. And this was, you know, 30 years ago he's saying this. So it's gotten even worse now. And I think that it seems to be some sort of a monolithic block that this is the information that's getting out. And we've also seen the same thing happen with the horrid events in Benghazi, that perhaps you have Fox News and maybe one straggling reporter such as Cheryl Atkinson of CBS or Jake Tapper of ABC trying to find out what really happened there. And otherwise, it didn't happen. Nothing to see here, folks.
So I think
that is really a frightening concept, that if you must, your news is not the real news. And my comment to that was that as opposed to years ago where you would think that fact equals fact, now agenda equals fact.
Oh, that's very interesting. I like that. Agenda equals fact. In that we're discussing rollerball. Isn't the difference, though, Anita, that at the end of the day, in that film, they go after the outlier, the individual. It's really a film
mm-hmm.
about individuality. They go after the individual because he can't be outside the herd. It's too dangerous for someone to be outside the herd. And where we are now, though, there are the way it's set up, there are actually two teams that are constricting us. There isn't one final – is there one final corporation? In other words, many people would make the argument – I no longer actually make it, but many people would make the argument that the opposite of MSNBC is Fox, that Fox has an agenda. They want Romney to win. They're going to tailor their news to favor Romney.
Oh, I don't debate that. And as horrible as, you know, there's some smear going on, I still remember Karl Rove in 2002. And if you don't support everything that the president does, you're a traitor and you don't support the troops and so on and so forth. So it's not that any one side is guilty of this. It's just that there is a prevailing line of thought and you have to, you know, you'd better adhere to that or you're in big trouble. And I think there's another, you know, this is also playing out the individual versus collective. Conservatives tried to capitalize on this when the president said, you didn't build that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, don't say that I'm just part of a collective. In other words, if I have a small business, yes, I work 24/7 and I did build that. So they're trying to capitalize on that narrative also. And, you know, depending on where you fall and what is more valuable, the group or the individual. I mean, this is a debate that many countries have constantly.
I don't think it's necessarily a debate that the collective can naturally win in the United States. And
well, you know, yeah, I agree with that because the there is something about the American spirit that just that wants to be, we want to be, I don't want to say cowboys, but there's a part of us, and it's healthy, that we want to go our own way. That's why this nation was built in the first place. We have a healthy case of, I just don't give a a hoot. You know, I'm going to do things the way I want to do it. And if not, we would not have the entrepreneurial spirit that we have. So I think that spirit is what makes people find the cure for cancer, as it were. And we need to celebrate it. And I think ultimately, even though Rollerball is not considered a masterpiece, I would think, as some of Norman Jewison's other great films are, but it really does have a great message about breaking free from somebody who is trying to tell you that you can go this far and no farther. I think that's a very powerful message that we need to hold on to and celebrate.
I agree. And the fact that a film like Rollerball got made is evidence of that spirit in and of itself. I have always thought and continue to think that the hippie in Humboldt County growing pot and the flinty Yankee in New Hampshire, who doesn't want to pay a dime in extra in taxes, and the NASCAR dad in the South, who doesn't want the government screwing, you know, just has different views on social issues, but doesn't want the government screwing with them, or, you know, the feminist who's saying, hands off my body, all have more in common when it comes to exactly what we're talking about right now, Anita, that sort of spirit. The underlying thread is do not tread on me. Stay
away. Oh, that's
away.
So beautifully said. That's fabulous. Brilliant. Brilliant.
And why whenever we get into these conversations, I mean, and I get into this conversation a lot on my blog or in my life, that fear, I think that to a certain degree it's overstated. Where it isn't overstated, because Americans, it's overstated because Americans are, I don't know how else to put it, but Americans are American. There is this sense of you can go so far and then that's enough. Is it slipping? I happen to believe it is. So many people on disability, so many people getting government assistance, and there does come a moment when you hit a critical mass where everybody's dependent on it. But as of right now, I think that spirit is still there.
Well, it sort of manifests itself in strange places, John, even out in the Twitterverse, and you and I have talked about this, mm-hmm. that there are people fighting against that collective or the media narrative that's foisted upon us, and they're trying to find their own way of communicating and stepping away from that. And oddly enough, I wanted to share this with you. You've probably heard this phrase before, but out here in LA, many people participate in Agape. It's a different kind of church service. And I remember a friend took me to one such service, I don't know, must have been 15 years ago. And I listened to the Reverend Michael Beckwith. And he said one thing that I thought was amazing. He said, be involved, not enthralled.
Oh.
Because so many people, yeah, isn't that great? Because so many people are enthralled. And I think that was the objection I had, you know, the trouble I had with President Obama when he was campaigning, was that so many people were sort of worshipful of him and just so starry-eyed about the message rather than looking at, is there a disconnect between the words and the actions?
Well, that was, I think that emanated from the pain of the moment, and I have theorized on this, and I do think that there is a large segment of the population. I just don't happen to think it's the majority, regardless of the fact that he won. He won because the middle gave him a chance. Whoever wins this time will be because the middle has changed its mind or the middle is willing to stay with Obama. That's how it's going to work.
Yes,
but there is 35% that were just determined to prove something, and they did become starry-eyed, and they're still starry-eyed. They went off the ranch for a little while midterm, but they're back, and they are starry-eyed, and they aren't thinking individual, or a few of them probably are, but they aren't thinking as individuals. The point I wanted to get to, though, because I want to dovetail this with the next movie we want to talk about, which is one of my favorite movies, if not my favorite movie ever made, is because there is such a strong sense of, I'm going to call it the individual mandate, to misuse a term. There is such an individual mandate in the United States. I mean, we're doing it right now. We're doing a show on Blog Talk Radio. That is a very sort of quintessentially American thing to do. Get a show, get your own show. since there is such an individual mandate, I do think that we have entered a period where the media, one of the main functions of the media is to manage our opinions. And I don't know if I'm very left or very right on this, that consent needs to be manufactured, which in many ways is what the theme of network is, which I'm going to presume that many people have seen it. It's one of the most important films made in the last 50 years.
Well, you can do a 100 words or less summary in case anybody has missed it.
Oh, I don't know if I can do it. I don't know if I ever can do 100 words or less on anything. It's that has yet to be proven.
Oh,
but
okay.
The upshot is Howard Beale, played by Peter Finch, is the anchor of a network newscast, UBS. It's a fictitious news network. He learns that his ratings are down, and his boss and friend, William Holden, says, your last 2 weeks, you're fired after 2 weeks. I'm sorry. They go out. They drink. They talk about the destruction of the media and how it has fallen apart now. And Howard Beale comes back the next night, gets on the air, and says, I'm going to kill myself on the air. He's removed immediately. William Holden, his boss, gives him the chance to come back and to leave with dignity and apologize for his outburst. The next night, he, in fact, comes back and does what has become part of American culture, bursts into the I'm mad as hell speech. And we all know that everything is, and I put it on my blog, johnwsmart.net, the clip of that moment where he says, we know everything's bad. Essentially, you know you're no longer in control of your life. But the only thing you can do about it right now is to get up and say, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. Well, in the background is an up-and-coming.
I say that every day.
Exactly, exactly. In the background, watching this, is an up-and-coming executive played by Faye Dunaway, who's hungry and ambitious, and she realizes that she, and she says it, it's in the script, we have hit the mother load. And because they're screaming in Baton Rouge, they're screaming in Terre Haute, they're screaming in Des Moines, she realizes this is the thing that's going to save the network. And so they keep Howard Beale on the air, and instead of a news show, it becomes a rant show, and where he essentially winds up, it becomes 1984's Hate Hour. He winds up everybody. He gets things done. He says, you've got to, you know, send telegrams for this and call the White House for that, and things start changing. The ratings are through the roof, and Faye Dunaway loves it. She doesn't care. She has no moral center. She doesn't care what he's saying. She cares that people are watching. At one point, he decides to go after an oil deal, and today's analogy would be a deal with China, probably, or NAFTA, and say, stop this. This is bad for us. Well, his company, UBS, happens to be owned by a company that is going to be that's going to benefit from this deal. He destroys the deal. He's talked down. And then by Ned Beatty, who sort of gives him a God talk. And then the next night on the air, he brings it down to, thank you for everything you've done. The truth is, essentially, this is useless. It is worthless. There's nothing we can do to stop this machine. People don't want to hear that. The ratings start to drop. However, the president of the company wants him on the air. I won't give you the end, but that's what the final, you know, that's what happens in the end. They have to keep him on the air, even though now he's destroying the ratings. What is fascinating about this movie, if you watch it, they reconstruct the entire news division around this sort of ranting lunatic in Howard Beale. If you watch it now, it in fact is not in any way further past Ed Schultz or Glenn Beck when he was on, or Keith Olbermann when he was on.
Oh, no,
in other
it's
words,
the sanctimony of both sides and the rants of both sides. It's just as feverish. You're absolutely right about that.
Well, and it has nothing really to do with conveying information that might be of value to the population. It has to do with keeping your butt in the chair, which is a legitimate business concern, and getting wound up. In other words, what we've evolved into is a culture that has chosen sides. So Chris Matthews on one side.
And Sean Hannity on the other.
Sean Hannity on the other. molds the news, in quotes. You have anchors, in quotes, molding the news. Now, those are shows. They aren't necessarily all, you know, pure news shows. But to get you engaged, to keep you engaged, and essentially to divert you from the whole story. You're going to hear part of the story, but not all of it. But the important thing is that you're mad as hell, and you are always in the process of screaming I'm mad as hell, but never doing anything real about it. And what's compelling, remains compelling about the movie, is that it was prescient about what Rune Arledge eventually did at ABC, and everybody followed suit, which was news divisions were always assumed to lose money. They're going to lose money. But you had to have people in London and Riyadh. You had people around the world. It was something that was a service to us to report the news, like the BBC. Rune Arledge took it out of ABC News, out of news division, and put it in entertainment. Then along came Ted Turner. And so news became entertainment. And that is where we are now, where it is, in fact, an entertainment. It is not about informing you. How many people listening, how many times, Anita, have you had to go to a British paper for news that was not very supportive of Obama, for example?
Well, I mean, you know, you can't count that high because you're not going to get that here. And something that I've noticed too is in terms of the tail wagging the dog, the only truth is the media narrative that is painted for you. And if the media says it didn't happen, it didn't happen. You know, as somebody who's also an actor, in 2000, I remember when there was a commercial strike, and we couldn't get a foothold. 6 months this was going on, and these are rank-and-file actors, you know, losing their homes over this. And we weren't even able to get one article in a paper.
Mm-hmm.
If the news says you do not exist, then you do not exist. I mean, it really reminds you that David versus Goliath is something that we see in the narrative of both movies.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And a great example of that is happening right now with Benghazi, where one side is hammering at it, but the majority of the news has decided to ignore what looks to be a very large scandal, and a disastrous scandal at that. But you
well,
are correct.
Well, it's fascinating that, you know, that in the Twitterverse, people were trying to get the hashtag of Benghazi or Benghazi Gate or Benghazi Scandal or whatever to rise, and now they're talking about, you know, Disney is buying Lucasfilm. Like, that matters the week before an election. And it's amazing to me what trends, what has taken over, and you start to get a little bit cynical and wonder, wait a second, is somebody wagging this dog too?
Well, I think you're kind to say a little bit. Maybe you are a little bit cynical. I'm absolutely cynical. I think that the only way is cynical. Is it cynicism or is it realism? Is it honestly to sit and watch or to go through? I don't even know where to go anymore. Honestly, I don't know where to go. I will tell you that the PBS, or it used to be a PBS station, now it's just an independent station out here, runs Al Jazeera, for goodness sakes, twice a day. And I put it in my DVR a while back, and I would watch them, half hour, the news night of Al Jazeera. And let me tell you something. I learned more and continue to learn more about what's happening on planet Earth from Al Jazeera in a way that I don't feel like I'm becoming a stuffed turkey. They're not shoving stuff down my throat. Floods in the Philippines. There was one story after another. It's sort of like, okay, I realize it's a half an hour. I realize that you are choosing what's important. But, you know, a once in a century flood in Manila, you wouldn't have known about that. Completely ignored. And I think it happens over and over and over again in the United States, where there are huge news stories, which at one point Walter Cronkite would have covered, which simply don't get covered. And the fact that I have to sneak in through an independent station who needs filler time at 6 in the morning to watch a half hour of Al Jazeera, for goodness sake, to get a well-rounded vision of what might be happening on my home planet is very telling.
I agree with you, and I think also we're seeing examples of the herd mentality that we spoke of in Rollerball, it's exemplified in the way that the news is covered and the stories that they cover, and then you start to see it coming up from social media in terms of not breaking free of the herd mentality. Somebody wrote to me, I must have put up a picture of Hillary on my website because it was just her birthday on the 26th, and a woman wrote back to me. She says, well, I would vote for Hillary, but you know, she's not running, so I'm voting for Romney. And I just answered her. I said, well, thank you for writing. Glad you liked the picture. And hey, you know, more power to you, whatever you want to do. And two people must have been lying in wait on Facebook and then just attacked and had to make comments. No, it's not understandable, and she can't do this, and so on. And went about berating him. And it was just kind of odd. I thought, we were just making innocuous comments to each other.
Oh, so no, but people are trained.
Why does everybody have to run in and try to control your thought process?
Well, because that is how they feel like they're in control. And I have thought this for a long time. I mean, people
are... And that
they
think they're entitled.
Well, Facebook makes everybody think they're entitled. The internet makes, we talked about this last week, makes everybody think that their opinion is as valuable as everybody else's opinion. And most people do think that theirs are, but... It you know, it's an open forum. But the thing that's interesting to me is that we don't have any place to go really in this country. There are a few outlets left where I can go. I will go there to simply get information. What I have to do is go from this one to that one, the Drudge Report to Raw Story, and then synthesize what might be the real story. And I want to point out something. I Must Protest in the chat room said two things that I think are really good, and I agree with both of them. Well, actually, one was Lynette Nickel, I hope I'm saying that right, says, I like the Christian Science Monitor. I agree with that. The Christian Science Monitor still is a newspaper of record. I don't feel like I'm being told what to think. And I Must Protest says something really important. When CNN replaced Aaron Brown with the flashy Anderson Cooper, it was clear that they did not care about the news. I do believe that that is correct, that that moment when Aaron Brown was replaced, he was sort of the last holdout of the old guard on cable news networks, was replaced by Anderson Cooper, who is fine, but he's not a newsman. He's a personality. That there was a pivot point there. And I don't think we've come back from it.
Well, you know, I remember, I think you're right about that, and I keep going back to something that the late, great George Carlin said. I may have mentioned this before. He said, you think you have choice in this country? Here's your choice. Window or aisle, leaded or unleaded, decaf or regular.
Oh, sure.
And I think that there is really, I don't mean to be, you know, I certainly don't want to put forth more cynicism or negativity, because I'm saying this because I think that it is important for us to work to break free of that collective kind of thinking. And certainly when I wrote Dirty Words on Clean Skin, the biggest reason I wrote it was because I wanted to share with people, say, you know what, I'm an anomaly. I don't fit into a neat little category. I don't believe all the things you think I'm supposed to believe. I'm not where you think I'm from. I'm not from the class you think I'm from. I'm a lot of different things than you think when you see me walk into the room. And I am capable of communicating with the left, with the right, with the middle, with Maine, with California, with Oregon, with Alabama. I'm capable of all of those things and finding friends everywhere. I will not be restricted, and I will not look down my nose at anybody, and I will not live to be rude to those people. I want to get to know who they are. So I think that the more people stand up and reach past those two wag the dog, you know, narratives that we're stuck with, the better off we will be. But I think it's very hard to break free when you've got the media doing this to you on a constant basis.
Well, and there's nowhere to go. I mean, the only thing I would add to that, I agree, is that I think most people are like that if you stop and talk to them, but they don't spend the time to stop and think. They don't want to. Most people don't want to think. They want to be told what to think, and that is scary. And we are out of time, Anita. Thank you.
How frightening.
We'll be back next Tuesday with more talk.
What a great evening. Thank you so much, everyone, for being here.